From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. A new decade inevitably prompts reflection, who we are as a nation now and where we're headed toward in the future. And so in recent days, a series of articles, speeches, and even news stories have resurrected the question of whether America's preeminent role in the world is in decline, and if so, who might fill it? That's our cover story today. The answer to the question is quite often China. And in a recent poll taken by CNN, nearly 60% of Americans said they regard China's wealth and economic power as a threat. And that anxiety seemed to fuel some of the news coverage this week when video surfaced of a test flight of a prototype Chinese stealth fighter.
China's military showing off its new stealth fighter jet.
Known as the J-20. A rare glimpse of the future of China's Air Force.
And it happened while Secretary of Defense Robert Gates is in China.
China, in a show of military bravado, has staged its first test flight of a stealth fighter jet.
Now, there is no doubt that China is an emerging power. Its military budget has increased threefold over the past decade, and its economy is now the third largest in the world. And those topics and others will be front and center when Chinese President Hu Jintao arrives to Washington Tuesday on a state visit. But let's for a moment unpack those seemingly impressive numbers. The U.S. still spends more on defense than every other country in the world combined. China is planning to build an aircraft carrier. The U.S. has 11. And as for stealth fighters, well, China has a prototype. The U.S. has many dozens in operation as we speak, and in both nominal and per capita terms, the U.S. economy still dwarfs China's. And so perhaps in a bid to relieve some of the anxiety about China's rise and its intentions, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton addressed the issue yesterday.
This is a critical juncture, yes. But I would say to my fellow Americans, this is not a time to fear for the future.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, there are conflicting viewpoints about America's position in the world and China's rise. In a moment, we'll hear from someone who says, stop panicking. But first to Gideon Rackman, whose forthcoming book is called Zero Sum Future. He's written this month's cover story in Foreign Policy magazine, and it's called America's Decline. This time, it's for real.
It's relative decline. I mean, I think that what we're talking about, in my mind, is a transition from a period between the end of the Cold War in 1989 and the financial crisis in 2008, when America had its unipolar moment, when there was no other plausible superpower, and American military power, but also American ideas, seemed all-powerful, the ideas of democracy, free markets, etc., so that we even thought that globalization was a form of Americanization. I think in the aftermath of the financial crisis, it's become clear that we're going back to a world in which, although America will remain a preeminent power probably for a while yet, it has competitors again.
And you predict that as a result of this, that the relationship between China and the U.S. will actually get worse in the next year.
Yeah, I think things are going to get a bit bumpy over the next 5 years and more. I mean, I think that the reason is that both sides are reassessing the relationship in ways that make it a little more adversarial. I think for the United States, the assumption that the Chinese economic relationship was equally beneficial to the U.S., clearly that's coming under challenge in Congress and elsewhere. But I think also that the Chinese are beginning to feel that, well, you know, our time is coming and that it's maybe a bit time for us to be a little more assertive. The China-U.S. relationship has always had elements of friendship and cooperation and rivalry, and I think the rivalrous elements are becoming more emphasized now.
But it still is a very much a mutually dependent relationship. China depends on the U.S. market for its products. The U.S. depends on China, of course, for borrowing. The conventional wisdom on that relationship is that if it is managed properly, both sides win. So why is that wrong?
Well, I think that it's more complicated than that. I mean, I think that there are win-win elements to the relationship, and it's a phrase the Chinese have picked up from us. You're constantly told, if you go to Beijing or Shanghai, this is a win-win relationship. But I think they say it again and again because they're worried that we in the West, and particularly in the US, are beginning to reassess that relationship. I think that there are two main ways in which it's not so win-win. Firstly, I think that this whole question of global economic imbalances and of high unemployment in the West illustrates that globalization isn't an unadulterated win for the United States or for the Europeans simply because we are coping with the loss of a lot of jobs. That's the economic aspect. I think the political aspect is that a rising power like China, particularly a China that has a very different political system from that of the United States, and that has a sense that it has been humiliated in the past, inevitably they are going to be more assertive in ways that we find uncomfortable.
So specifically, what would a more assertive Chinese power do?
Well, we'll see, to be honest. I think there's a debate in China about how they should deploy this power. But I think the Chinese feel that it's not that they want a direct confrontation with the United States. I think, on the contrary, they're very keen to avoid that. I think the way they see it is that they gradually grow Chinese power and military capabilities at a time when America is increasingly under financial strain and is cutting back on its military, or is thinking of cutting back on its military, and that that balance of forces changes over 10, 20 years and more, which means that they don't have to have a direct confrontation because people just gradually get used to the new situation. Now, it may not be that smooth or that easy.
As you know, there have long been comparisons between where America is now and where Great Britain was at the end of the 19th century. And I wonder if those comparisons are somewhat hyperbolic.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you on that. I mean, I think that the, you know, if you look back at the history of the British Empire, it was pretty remarkable that a country with that very small proportion of the world's population, a small island, should have that huge extent of territory around the world. And that was clearly less sustainable situation than that of the United States. However, I think where the parallel is interesting is that, I mean, it does suggest that all dominant powers have their period, and then whether through its replacement by another power or by a multipolar system, whether through war, through by peaceful means, generally, no power is dominant for forever.
That's Gideon Rackman. He's the chief foreign affairs commentator for the Financial Times and author of the forthcoming book, Zero Sum Future, American Power in an Age of Anxiety. Gideon Rackman, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thomas P.M. Barnett is the chief analyst at Wikistrat and a former Pentagon analyst. He's just back from China, and it's fair to say he's got a different perspective.
I think the hype on China right now is really out of control. It's very similar to the way the British looked at us, say, around the turn of the century, 1890s, early 1900s. I mean, they imagined we could have bought and sold them. The Chinese couldn't do the same with us. Their economy is still a fraction of ours. I always say, if you want to understand an America like a China, invite everybody, and I mean everybody, in the Western Hemisphere to come live in the continental United States. Would we have rich people? Lots of them. Would we have a big middle class? Big middle class. Would we have 600-700 million interior rural poor? Yes, and that would feel like China.
So you would concede that China won't sort of overtake the United States economically, maybe militarily, anytime soon, but that it could conceivably happen in the next 40 or 50 or 60 years.
Sure, but that's going to be a very, very different China. I mean, our expectations about democratization over there, I think, are a little out of whack when you look at the history of the region. The modern China, with the real revolution being Deng Xiaoping in the late 70s, early 80s, that country's about 30 years old. And I look at a situation where you're going to be talking about the people who've only grown up in the post-Deng age coming to power in their 50s in the late 2020s, early 2030s. That's where I look for China to do the democratization process. And I think if we accept the fact that they just, you know, they're not going to turn into America on our timetable and stop being so stunned that 40 years after Nixon goes to China, they're still Chinese, I think we can live with them the next 20 years. And actually getting through the next 20 years with them cooperatively, collaboratively, is not only a good idea, it's absolutely essential when you consider a global middle class aspiring to a lifestyle that the planet cannot sustain if we use old resource models.
Tom Barnett, as you know, every time we hit the new year, people start talking about America's role in the world, and we've been talking a lot about that for the past decade. Let's, for argument's sake, say, and I think you can make a pretty compelling argument, that America's preeminent role in the world is coming to an end. Its status as a sole superpower. It seems pretty clear that China won't necessarily fill that role as a sole superpower, but rather become another pole of power along with the U.S. I mean, hasn't that already started to happen in a sense?
I would argue yes, and that it's a good thing, and that the biggest problem in the system right now is our inability to deal with that success. We created an international liberal trade order after the Second World War because we decided after fighting in two world wars, this was the way to get past colonialization, free trade, make the economics lead, democracy will follow. We were hugely successful in the West. We attract the emulation of the East. Now we call it a global economy, globalization. Everything we've sought to have happen has happened. We've also created a system, first time in history, that allows great powers to rise. So in Asia, you have Korea, Japan, India, China, all rising, all powerful, no real prospect of great power war. You have Europe, Germany, France, Britain, Russia. No real prospect of great power war there. These are huge successes. First half of the 20th century, that octet and a few others killed 100 million people. We've created the system for these people to rise, and now we seem uncomfortable with the fact that we're not going to be the sole pole anymore in the system. And we don't seem to know how to ask anybody else's help.
That's Thomas P.M. Barnett. He's the chief analyst at Wikistrat and a former analyst at the Pentagon. His article in Esquire is called When China Ruled the World. It's in the latest issue. Thomas Barnett, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.